The long grass, sodden with moisture, penetrated my ghillie shoes with every step. How can he land at such speed? He could crash, I said to the wind as the tiny craft disappeared into the murk of the English day. The north wind cut through me, and the blue clouds tossed their dark skirts across the sky, full of the whisperings of snow as the fat yellow clouds banked to the east. Reading the writing in the sky, I watched with relief as the shadowy form of the aircraft emerged far out on the field. She taxied toward the haven of the hangar, her engine pulsating with rhythmic wholeness in the lull of the wind. Flurries of snow swept past as the pilot turned her nose into the hangar entrance and the ground crew surrounded her. The full-throated, whining roar of her engine died to silence as the pilot, hampered by cumbersome fur-lined boots and a sheepskin jacket, slowly climbed out of the cockpit. He stood wearily beside the aircraft for a moment, then yielded to the backroom boffins. Their excitement was electric, but he shook them off like an impatient bear and strode toward me, taking my arm in a vice-like grip and pulling me along with the momentum of his stride. "It's a miracle," he muttered. "She handled like a bird up there above the clouds, and her landing speed is higher than anything tested before. Thank God I did the flight plan myself. She is a wonder plane." The pilot's enthusiasm for the aircraft entrusted to his skill overcame his weariness. I knew my husband only too well and remained silent as he peeled off his flying helmet and goggles with weary impatience and searched in his pocket for a cigarette. He lit it as we reached the lee of the mess, lines of strain and fatigue clearly etched on his face in the flare of the match. If I voiced my fears for his safety while making a fast turn or when pulling out of a steep dive high above the clouds where the element of air in the third dimension reacts differently to our senses, he would laugh and say that I was imagining things again. The ocean of air, our vast canopy of protection, is of a different substance in the higher reaches of its secret heights. It has accelerated the tempo of transport for those who climb the sky, but the smoke and smog of humankind's poisonous habits can retard the higher functions of his brain and senses when he exists as a denizen of the ocean floor of air and must breathe a denser pressure of molecules in slower time. As we entered the lounge bar, the heated atmosphere caused me to choke and recoil. Cigarette smoke hung in blanket-like bands across the room. Aircraft technicians and personnel set up a monotonous hum of conversation against the discordant din of the background music. With a feeling of despair in my heart, I quickly bagged our usual table by the window. I could open it without anyone seeing and get some fresh air, no matter how cold, whenever a feeling of claustrophobia affected me. It was bad enough being in England with a cloud blanket that never seemed to lift days and days of it. I longed for the wide open spaces of my homeland far away to the south, a beloved land where the east wind blows with the fresh clean tang of the sea across vast stretches of rolling grassland and the glory of the sky is open to the heavens. A land where the Southern Cross glitters with spangled arms across the meridian and the deep bowl of the sky, alight with the glow of millions of star systems. I longed to breathe the air of the wide open spaces again, with the fragrance of rain, and to feel the wind on my face. I belonged out there, in the pure atmosphere of the sky, flying over the mountains, flying through the clouds and under the glittering stars, in the velvet sky, with the glow of light always there high above. I longed to live in the ocean of air, to hear the celestial note of the wind, to sense and feel the vibrations and freedom of our planet moving with the velocity of a spaceship through the fathomless reaches of space and away from the habitat of people who swarm and crawl on her surface like slugs of the airy depths. Looking through the window, I noticed that the low, scudding clouds had lifted. The great pile of the de Havilland buildings stood dark and gaunt against the reflection of the lights of London on the base of the cloud mass. Brilliant light still illuminated the hangar where the boffins studied the wonder plane. Codenamed TK4, perhaps it would revolutionize flying for England, enabling the nation to have a craft to defend her skies against any of the aggressive invaders who seemed to get more and more ruthless in their quest for power and world domination and who were forever devising more horrible and diabolical weapons of destruction. to destroy one's fellow creatures and one's planet is a reflection of mass insanity. Violence and destruction are but a symbol of power for the race of humankind on Earth. Vast masses of people who have barely evolved beyond savage flesh-eating murderers. They are barbarians, whose one ambition is to destroy. The way of tolerance and coexistence with all nature is not yet understood. Instead, a twisted state of mind exists, spawned by centuries of wrong thinking and living, in all social systems set up by people of Earth. Humankind of planet Earth is thereby a product of its environment. I longed to escape from it all, but found myself bound up at the forefront of a nation's preparations for the defense of her very existence. In a world becoming more dangerous to live in, I wondered at my husband's nonchalant attitude and realized that he would think nothing of the dangers involved. His only anxiety was to shield me from them. Little did he realize how my powers of observation, instilled since childhood, could foresee the trend of human behavior. Humankind thrives on disaster, and my mind was constantly aware of the disasters to come and the dreadful perils ahead. Our planet is under close surveillance by an alien but highly advanced civilization from outer space. Premonitions had come to me in the past and taken tangible shape in their due time, but now time was running out fast. Perhaps it would come suddenly one night, a world war triggered in the hush of night. Perhaps it would come while my husband marked a fleeting furrow through the peaceful sky to navigate his airy wanderings. What would it be like to be annihilated in a flimsy aircraft, shot down out of a beautiful summer sky with only the stars to witness the cruel calculation of man's inhumanity to man? My husband suddenly woke up out of his reverie over a whiskey. "We have an appointment with the chief this evening," he said. The evening was bitterly cold when we went out into the snow-filled atmosphere, and I was thankful the wind had dropped. We were soon with the chief, an old friend who greeted us warmly in his natural, courteous manner. His eyes took in every detail of our appearance, a habit of cold observation instilled through years of heavy responsibility and duty to his country. I was happy to be with him again and had much to tell him, so much to tell of a particularly thrilling nature, something of wonder and excitement that I felt sure he would understand and listen to. A man of his experience and position would know of the spaceships appearing in our skies. "Yes, my dear," he said. "I am very anxious to hear what you have to say, and what do you think? A report has just been handed to me that an unidentified flying object was sighted by two of our pilots while on a cross-country maneuver this afternoon in the vicinity of your husband's flight path with the TK-4. Some time back, I received a dispatch from South Africa stating that you had both reported the sighting of an unidentified flying object, which paced your DH aircraft while flying over the Drakensberg." His eyes softened as I looked directly into them and told him every detail of our experience, and of my childhood experiences. "It is as I suspected," the chief replied. "Our planet is under close surveillance by an alien, but highly advanced, civilization from outer space." He paused for a moment, looking at me intently. "And you, my dear, seem to be dedicated to this. You know what to look for, you are not afraid, and I can think of no one more qualified. Besides, you have intuition and imagination, which is very important in this advanced research. Will you do it for us?" "Of course I shall do it," I answered without hesitation. "Thank you, my dear," the chief said. "I feel sure something will come of this. Help and guidance will be given to the sorely afflicted peoples of this planet, who seem unable to live in peace and harmony. And as you know, you have been thoroughly vetted. We know the full history of your family and its ancient lineage. This research may take you many years," he went on. "Therefore, every detail of information must be given to me, no matter how fantastic. We are dealing with a fantastic realization. I want you to use your powers of extrasensory perception and follow up any hunches you may have. This extraordinary ability you are so liberally endowed with can be of tremendous value to us." The hour was very late when we left him, and in that moment of leaving, I was aware that he had slumped back in his chair. What dreadful responsibilities rested on his frail shoulders. My heart went out to him, and the memory of the deep sadness in his eyes spurred me to redouble my efforts to find the great spaceship one day, to seek help for the people of Earth and perhaps salvation from an advanced people from beyond our skies. I stood stunned for a moment, trapped, helpless. My natural independence of spirit, the glorious heritage of freedom I was brought up with, faded away into the mists of the past, and the dead weight of responsibility threatened to crush my soul. Early the next morning I escaped in the MG along the Great North Road to the village of Aston and the home of my paternal ancestors. The family seat, Astonbury, was set among the ancient trees of England, which dappled the emerald sward with leafy shadows. Leaving the MG in the drive, I walked on through the park, inhaling the fragrance of sweet, damp earth and vegetation. Fallow deer paced beside me with gentle patience, sensing my preoccupation, while through the trees the great mansion of Astonbury glowed with its wealth of rose brick and many Tudor chimneys. Gone were the halcyon days of freedom and leisure. The ease and grace of a world that belonged to the few, in which I had been born and nurtured, had faded away into the fog of time. I found solace, however, in the quiet beauty and peace of the scented park. I looked toward the lily pond my grandmother had made out of a bomb crater many years ago when the beautiful mansion was spared from destruction and the evil thoughts of those intent upon their many tribal wars. Walking on, beside the ancient, creepered walls of my ancestral home, I resolved to help protect a freedom inherited through the centuries as only an island nation can know: the freedom of the seas, the freedom of the skies, the freedom of space. Freedom is the very stuff of life, and without it one ceases to live. Yet I realized that most people were unaware of the wider scene of faraway places. They could not connect the whole or comprehend how it would affect them all with crushing impact in years to come. They had rallied around in panic to stem the flow of Hitler's hordes, but there was no vision to gauge the blow to England's pride that was now being forged. The veil of silence is so cunningly drawn over the perception of man that he cannot see the plan to enslave him with wars and rumors of still more wars to come, wars of racial strife, black against white in a bid to take over the planet. Each year on Earth goes by a little faster than the one before. Gazing into the limitless sky, I suddenly felt a longing so intense that it seemed to transport me away from the material things about me. It was a longing to see the great spaceship again, hovering like a wraith in the depths of blue, mysterious, unattainable and remote from this warring planet. Where was she now, and where did she come from, and why was I so deeply affected by the thought of her? Did she nurture some precious being who would change my whole life, and who was already in telepathic communication with me? In my longing to escape from the dangerous confines of this planet, a strange restlessness filled my soul, and I sensed this urgency with acute knowledge. To go home, that was it, I thought. I must go home to the rolling foothills of the Drakensberg, where the long grasses whisper and sing to the touch of the south wind that brings the tang of the sea in its breath. Perhaps my freedom would come sooner than I expected. Perhaps I could go home to the freedom of the mountains I loved, the mountains of the dragon hiding in the mist. I longed to turn from the casual and flippant ways of humankind. The honor and ethics of my upbringing were deeply rooted, and I had found my only happiness in the sky. That was now denied me, as fighter planes and bombers took to the air. I was grounded and always shadowed by a lithe individual who kept his distance, as the chief netted me within his circle of security. Perhaps I did know too much, I thought, and the first twinge of fear struck at my heart. The only escape and refuge was Astonbury, the home of my beloved grandmother, whose gentle presence could still be felt throughout the vast mansion. Her love of horses, inherited from her ducal parents, was portrayed in unexpected places with the magic of a true artist, and I could feel her guiding hand on my shoulder as I wandered on through the garden. It seemed that my future would be shaped from here, where there was so much gentleness amidst a violent universe. Here, the old retired horses could browse away their closing days in the sheltered home paddock, and the cats could sleep in peace by the kitchen range, always sensing the presence of my lovely grandmother in the home of her ancestors. My questing mind had searched through the years for skies and seas of sapphire blue, a land and seascape not of this world, but another home of life, another island moving in the vast void of heaven where soft mountains mantled with emerald sward sweep down to the sea. That tranquil sea of vast dimensions touched a chord in my memory like a note sounding in the key of evolution, eternally vibrating in the scale of the spectrum. I knew of a lovely planet glowing in the velvet depths of space beyond the light barrier. My soul attuned to her eternal vibration and my destiny forever entwined within her magnetic field as the magic of the lodestone gives affinity of telepathic thought to permeate the mind. I felt sure that one day I would find this mysterious and exotic land. I never doubted its existence. It was a race memory, revealed by time as a dimension of development, as time is of our mortal essence and is steadily accelerating our consciousness toward simultaneity and the infinite. Each year on Earth goes by a little faster than the one before. Would an advanced civilization help us to find these secrets to interstellar travel? My gentle parents, far away in the sunny land of my birth, wrote to me about time and how it had speeded up for them. In aging, one's inner clock slows down while Earth time remains constant. This planet moves in three directions at the same time, giving to us our speed or flow of time past, present and future. There is less and less time to do things as one grows older, and time is speeded up because the processes of the living body are slowing down. As planet Earth rotates and speeds in orbit about the star of her system while the whole solar system moves in orbit about the nucleus of the galaxy, we mark intervals of time by the clock. We become slaves to it and, harassed by the continuous and inexorable ticking away of intervals of time, our souls cry out for peace and freedom from it. If we knew how, we could control the variable nature of time, as time is a wave motion in a triple unity with light and gravity. Perhaps we could find an alternating wave motion in time and escape to the stars. I felt sure that this was already a reality for an advanced civilization out there, whose spaceships could move in a stream of time in reverse to our time. Perhaps they would help us to find these secrets to interstellar travel, if we could forge a link with them. And the link, I knew, would indeed be found through love. The secrets of light. We received transfer orders home to South Africa, and the chief's instructions to me before leaving England still rang in my mind: find that spaceship at all costs. It could mean the salvation of our planet and our race. A shiver of apprehension caused me to catch my breath as he said these words. Our beautiful planet, host to such a destructive predator as man. It is no wonder that we lift our eyes to the heavens. I knew that it was a spaceship from another planet, another world somewhere out there, and through the years, I had lived with this knowledge, knowing within my heart that the spaceship would return. I prepared myself spiritually, mentally and intellectually to attain a wholeness with the universe and tune into the infinite. I worked to develop a sense of telepathic communication with all nature and living creatures and, in so doing, to become whole in spirit, mind and body. To meet with people of a highly advanced civilization, thousands of years ahead of Earth people, I could only hope for contact if I was prepared to go halfway to find them. Being aware of their presence in our skies, I practiced telepathy with horses, dogs and cats, and even with plants, machines or anything with the electric spark of life. I found this to be of great value in my experience through the years, and eventually I was able to communicate with the man who came in the spaceship from beyond our solar system. As time went by through the years of preparation, the telepathic link became stronger and stronger. In the understanding of universal harmony, I knew his name within my soul and I knew that he was there within the spaceship. Upon our arrival at Cape Town, the scene through the window was dreary, wind-blown and wet. The rain lashed in torrents against the windows, driven by the swift downdrafts of a southeaster. Where were the open skies of my beloved homeland, the fathomless depths of blue? The fairest gape in the world stood braced against the relentless polar front. It swept across the empty southern seas from Antarctica, where a volcanic link lies in the seabed, from the mighty peak of Mount Erebus to the tumbled mountains of the Cape, where vineyards flourish in the valleys. I had seen the cloud cap draped snugly upon the summit of Table Mountain, with another stay-put cloud hovering in the windy sky high above. It was strange and lovely, smooth and lens-shaped, with iridescent colors around its circumference, like a painting by Dali. Its unearthly beauty was anchored by a standing wave of air that billowed up from some irregularity of ground to windward. It was an omen of bad weather and cold leaping winds, and we prepared for a day of rain squalls, with all aircraft grounded. The shrill and demanding clamor of the telephone startled me out of my reverie, and the peace and seclusion of my office transformed to bedlam by the screeching monster. The voice at the other end of the line was strident with excitement. Fire. Fire in number 11 hangar. My mind raced ahead, oblivious of the flow of words pouring out along the wires. All the planes were grounded, and sabotage was so easy in a land where attack was unknown and unprepared for. My husband would be there fussing round the planes by now. Slamming the receiver down, I grabbed my raincoat and ran out into the icy squall. The flames had enveloped two of the planes, and my husband was valiantly pushing away another. As I ran to help him, a petrol tank exploded. We were both flung to the ground, and a black cloud smothered my senses. I had felt the touch of death and knew it was all part of the preparation. Very slowly, I became aware of light and movement around me. I felt terribly hot and pushed my foot into the lovely, cold sheets at the side of the mattress. I pushed the bedclothes away and tried to turn over. A kind face framed in white linen hovered over me, and hands wrapped the hot bedclothes about me again. I was restless and I longed for coolness. Suddenly, the heat faded away as my mind reached out for relief. A refreshing breeze fanned my cheeks, and a scene, luminous but with a clear perspective, unfolded around me. I was sitting in lush, cool emerald grass on the top of a hill overlooking an expanse of dark blue sea. The fragrant breeze blew from across the sapphire sea and, far below, a beautiful curve of bay sparkled in the morning sunlight. Behind me stretched a fantastic mass of mountains, their emerald slopes dotted with enormous golden trees and mountain tops of deep rose rocks glowing in the sunlight against the delphinium blue of sky. Coming in toward the hill from across the sea, a beautiful circular craft glinted and flashed in the sunlit atmosphere. The lovely vision faded as quickly as it had come, and I heard voices around me. "She is out of danger now," a man said softly. "It's quite remarkable. I didn't expect her to pull through." The familiar atmosphere of a busy hospital, the muffled sounds beyond the half-opened door, flowed back with lucid adaptation. I turned my head to look out through the window and saw the wooded mountainside of Devil's Peak. Above the timberline, a banner of cloud streamed like a flag, continuously gaining new substance as air, riding on the wind's back, condensed near the crest. As I slowly regained my strength, the lovely vision I had experienced remained alive and real, filling me with a warmth of secret happiness. Here was the mysterious and exotic land of my dreams. The faraway planet somewhere beyond the light barrier and the time barrier of this solar system. I could see a man standing in the ship, looking at me. I looked back at him without flinching. Soon I was allowed to leave Grootshua Hospital and go home to the rolling foothills of the Drakensberg Mountains. I had felt the touch of death and knew it was all part of the preparation. It is when one can respond with love and kindness, understanding and wisdom, and with no vestige whatsoever of fear or hate, that one can hope to meet with the people who maintain the interstellar spaceships, to approach within their domain. I waited for the man from space to make physical contact, but the key was first to find him with my mind and spirit in complete harmony. It happened one stormy night while I lay quietly meditating. The rain lashed in torrents, driven by gale force winds, across the iron roof of the farmhouse, sometimes roaring down the chimney to fan the flames of the log fire. My sister had gone to the kitchen to make tea when, suddenly, I was teleported up through the ceiling, though my body remained on the couch. As I went up through the clouds, I could feel the wind blowing in my face and pressing my cheeks inward with its reality. Above the clouds, two spaceships were hovering in the clear sky. Akin's ship lowered a little and I knew we had found each other. This brought me into close communication, a bond of affinity and love with Akin, who assured me of his physical presence and transmitted much information about his way of life, where he came from and the great civilization of his people. When the time was right, I went out into the mountains to find him, away from the cities and pollution of Earth people, away to the beautiful and mysterious Drakensberg of Natal, where I was born in the year of Halley's Comet. The Amazulu called to me from the mountaintops, their voices echoing through the valleys, tuning into the grapevine of their own method of communication. They told of the great wagon of the sky and the fiery visitors from the heaven country, who would come to take me away in the lightning bird whose scales glitter in many colors. It would land in a cloud upon a hill and there would be a meeting together. The storm doctor and the witch had foretold this, and the legend had grown around me since I was a child. The golden hair of your head will bring the Abelungu from the sky, they called across the valleys as I listened to their descriptive language, understanding it as well as my own. You are one who brings together, Inca Sezana. The heaven dwellers will come and take you away from us. And the song spread away in the hills. It was at this time that the spaceship came, and I sensed her proximity as great white cumulus clouds sailed with the east wind across the sky, clear cuts against the blue, using the clouds as camouflage. She tested my patience and faith, and she knew the secret within my soul. Gazing into the depths of blue, I saw a flash of light against the sky and then again near the outline of a cloud. The great spaceship appeared then, hovering below the clouds. It moved rapidly toward the hilltop, slipping gracefully and soundlessly through the air to hover again, a few hundred meters above and to the south of the hilltop. Then it slowly lost height to remain about a meter from the ground. A pulsating hum filled the air that caused my eardrums to pop from the sudden displacement of air caused by the huge ship. Its circular hull was at least 18 meters in diameter, with a rounded dome in the middle and three large portholes facing me, through which I could see a man standing in the ship, looking at me. I looked back at him without flinching. He stood there with his arms folded across his chest, regarding me with a compelling and hypnotic attraction about his eyes that seemed to influence and control me, even at that distance. With a shock, I realized that I was entirely forgetting my training and powers of observation, and it was with great willpower that I looked away from his eyes. I studied his face, the most wonderful face I had ever seen, and I felt a sense of affinity and love. A slight smile softened the ascetic lines of his face. It was a gentle smile and it caused my heart to miss a beat. I knew that smile had softened his eyes too, and I dared not look again into those eyes. My heart beat against my ribs with suffocating intensity. I felt faint. A man from another planet, another world, influencing my life. Time seemed to stand still at that moment. There was no fear. There was only a deep and exciting happiness. He instantly answered my thoughts. I observed his spaceship. Although I could see through the porthole, the whole effect was a dazzling brightness from its smooth glass-like surface, a bright haziness that came from their ship itself and not from the sun shining on it. Watching the hull, I realized it was spinning rapidly in a clockwise motion while the rounded dome remained stationary. It lowered a little more toward the ground, and the brightness began to hurt my eyes. The top of my head ached from the vibration set up in the atmosphere, and I wondered how much longer I could stand the pain in my head from these pulsing vibrations without turning away and running. The spaceship slowly began to rise vertically, the smooth perfection of its compact design etched against the blue sky through a haze of the white mist surrounding it. Then, suddenly, it flashed into the depths of blue and was gone, and only a heat wave effect shimmered in the atmosphere where seconds before it had hovered. My hat sailed up into the air like a live thing, and a blast of hot air struck me. My hat had gone as if there was no gravity to bring it back, and a strange feeling of weightlessness caused me to sit down suddenly on the grass. I remained sitting, close to the earth, too nervous to stand up again.